Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
So we got some juicy stuff to get to off the top of our program today. Paul Feinbaum made an Atlanta radio appearance this week, and I think what he said is really interesting. Let me set it up this way. Over the years, Alabama coach Nick Saban, Georgia coach Kirby Smart, because of the fact they've worked with each other and now compete against each other in high-profile games, they are just naturally going to be asked about each other a lot. Now, if you hear them talk, Saban about Smart, Smart about Saban, you just get the sense that they're just the happiest group of friends there ever was. That Saban, the longtime head coach, the veteran head coach, is almost like a proud papa looking down on the success that Kirby Smart's enjoying at Georgia. And it fills him with a great sense of pride knowing that he instilled some coaching values in Smart that allow him to be successful. And if you listen to Smart speak about Saban, it's the example of, you know, I learned so much from him and I'm still learning from him because we're just such close friends with each other. They talk about this kind of stuff a lot. In fact, as recently as the week before the SEC championship game, once again, Saban was going on and on about Kirby. To hear him say it, it's almost like the two are family with each other. In fact, here is what Saban said before the two teams played in December.
I think Kirby has done a fantastic job, and no surprise to me. You know, Georgia has always had a pretty good program, no doubt, and he has taken it to the next level. They've done an outstanding job of recruiting good players, but they've also done a really good job of developing the players and getting the players on their team to play at a high level on a consistent basis. So I always like to see guys, hey, we grew up with Kirby, and we were there when his children were born, and know his family, and have a tremendous amount of respect for him and appreciate the great job he did for us for 9 or 10 years or however long he was with us. And you always like to see those guys do well when you compete against them. It's really not personal, at least not to me. We're trying to get our team ready to play the best that they can play for our players' sake, and I'm sure he's going to do the same thing for his team.
So it's not personal. If anything, I like the success, Saban says. I enjoy seeing the success that Kirby Smart's having at Georgia. It makes me feel very proud. And, you know, Smart, when he talks about Saban's not really any different. You want to go back to the summer, Kirby Smart's getting ready to go into the 2018 season, trying to manage Jake Fromm and Justin Fields. And at the time, Smart told Paul Feinbaum, the guy we're about to hear from in just a minute, he told Paul Feinbaum that, no, listen, not only are we such, you know, close friends, he actually still gives me advice about how to handle situations right now. I still reach out to him on stuff like this. Here is Smart saying, yeah, me and Saban, we're buddies.
What is the relationship like now?
It's great. We played in the Chick-fil-A Classic a couple weeks ago. He and my partner and then Mark Ingram and him played and got to catch up. He currently has a golf course and a home up where my parents live, so I get to see him over the summer. He's been really great. He was really good at the draft. We got to share some ideas really on his quarterback situation and ours, some similarities.
Did you tell him which one to pick?
Oh, no. I'm talking about more about our situation.
But I'm sure he'll tell you which one to pick.
No question. He had some good pointers. I'll keep those between him.
You know, we would
fair.
Really like to know what he
share
said.
All that. Because always looking for good advice, especially dealing with the quarterback situation.
Oh, shucks. You know, golly gee whiz, I'm always looking for good advice, especially from my old buddy Nick Saban. That's what Smart says about Saban. But Paul Feinbaum, who you know, longtime radio host, SEC network personality, was on the Atlanta radio station, 680 The Fan. He was on with Domino and Cellini, that show, promoting an event taking place in the city of Atlanta. And on the subject of Smart and Saban, well, Paul Feinbaum, who knows the SEC pretty well, no matter what Smart and Saban may say publicly, Feinbaum sees the relationship between these two guys very different. Here's what Feinbaum said on 680 The Fan.
I still think Kirby Smart can upset Nick Saban, but I think that's an intense battle. Don't believe it when you hear Saban and Kirby Smart talk about their affection and respect for each other. They can't stand each other right now.
I mean, how much do you love hearing that from Feinbaum? Oh, yeah, Saban and Kirby, they can't stand each other right now. Now, from my perspective as a Georgia person, a fan of the program, a guy who follows the program closely, talks about it on this show every single day, I say good. I mean, I want Saban to hate Kirby Smart. And honestly, I don't mind the idea that Kirby Smart also hates Nick Saban. I think there's an energy that's brought out from something like that. Real legitimate bad blood, a real distaste for each other. I think that's actually kind of a good thing. I mean, let's face it, other former Saban assistants who've coached in the SEC, do you honestly think Nick Saban hated Jim McElwain when McElwain was at Florida? My guess is probably no. Didn't have much of a reason to. McElwain was no real threat. Same way for Will Muschamp, who's bounced around now from a couple of different schools at South Carolina now, Florida before. They don't play each other a ton, but you think Saban hated Will Muschamp, hates Will Muschamp right now at South Carolina? Probably not. Probably not much of a reason to. Jimbo Fisher at Texas A&M, maybe they'll grow into that. No really evidence yet to say that Saban thinks one way or another about Jimbo Fisher, his former offensive coordinator, now the head coach at Texas A&M. But if Saban has seen enough of Kirby Smart to decide, you know what, I don't like this guy very much anymore. I liked him a whole lot better when he was working for me and kind of subservient to me a lot more than I like him as an enemy. Guess what? I think that's kind of a good thing. And Feinbaum, on with 680 The Fan in Atlanta, went into a little more detail about, from his perspective, why he thinks the bad blood, at least from the Saban side, why Saban doesn't like Kirby. Well, Feinbaum was good enough to fill us in on his viewpoint as to why. Here's more from Feinbaum.
Yeah, I think Kirby left there, and you know, there was a lot of finger pointing toward Kirby. And what really created the friction that exists to this day is that Alabama officials and coaches blame Kirby Smart for ripping off the Inner Sanctum recruiting room. And what I mean by that is that Kirby went to recruits and said, listen, we want you. You're number one on our list, but I know for a fact that Alabama has you third or fourth or fifth. And that cost Alabama some key recruits, and they have not forgiven Kirby Smart yet in Tuscaloosa.
So I think it's really interesting from Feinbaum there. First of all, because this is what I think Alabama wants you to believe. I think Alabama and anyone who tells this story and, you know, anything like that, this is what they want you to believe. And first of all, these stories, if you've ever trafficked in any message boards, our forum at forum.dognation.com or any of the other prominent message boards, Alabama, Georgia related, either one, this story has been out there for a long time. Oh, Kirby on his way out the door, he took a picture of Alabama's recruiting board and used that for recruiting. That's what Alabama, I think, wants you to believe. I think they want you to believe that the recruiting success that Smart initially enjoyed against Nick Saban was ill-gotten, that it was gained by nefarious means of he was using information, insider trading type stuff to get that early success. The last thing Alabama wants you to think, the last thing that anybody who would represent Alabama and start whisper campaigns like this, the last thing that anybody would want you to believe is that no, head-to-head, Kirby versus Saban on the recruiting trail, a number of elite recruits just prefer Kirby Smart. They don't want you to believe that, but that's honestly what I believe is true. I think the real reason that Kirby and Saban don't like each other is probably twofold. First of all, don't discount the role. Do you remember Maurice Smith, who became Georgia's defensive MVP for the 2016 season? Not a great season, not a great team for Georgia in 2016, but Smith became a really good player. He was a graduate transfer from Alabama. The way that unfolded that offseason leading into Kirby's debut year at Georgia in 2016, don't discount that souring the Saban relationship when it comes to Kirby Smart. Kirby showed him very quickly into his career as a head coach that I don't work for you anymore. I'm going to be working against you, and it's going to get on your nerves because I'm going to go hard, full speed, every single play to try to get as many elite players in this program as I can. I think that turned Saban off right away. And then to see Saban have the success that he's, or I should say, to see Smart have the success that he's had against Saban, I think there's just a natural tendency for Saban, who wants to be a, you know, self-preservationist, who wants to think that his perch on the top of the SEC is safe and insured, to see Smart working as hard as he is, as diligently as he does, I think that creates part of the bad blood, that Smart is not recognizing old agreements. And the old agreement where Smart's going to be a lieutenant to the General Saban, that ain't it anymore. It's Smart who wants everything that Saban has, and Smart, a hard-driving, upwardly mobile guy, is not content to wait. He's not content to say, you know what, I'm only going into year four of my coaching career. Saban's been coaching for a really long time, so let me just bide my time and be patient, and one day I'll be just as good as Saban is once Saban's gone. No, Kirby says, I want to be as good as Saban while Saban's still here. I want to take food off of his table, and honestly, if you're Nick Saban, you don't like that very much. In fact, Paul Feinbaum, on with the Atlanta sports radio station 680 The Fan, went into even more detail about exactly how he thinks Saban kind of views Kirby Smart right now. And if you're a Georgia fan, I think you're going to like this.
I think even though he has lost to Nick Saban twice, he's the only coach out there that I think has gotten inside Nick Saban's head. I say that for this reason. Kirby Smart beat Nick Saban in recruiting last year. That hasn't happened since Saban arrived from Miami nearly 11 years ago. It drove Saban off the deep end. Now, he reacted to it in such a way that he He dumped some longtime coaches. He brought in recruiters who, by the way, couldn't coach. So by the time they got to Clemson, they had a really good team, but the coaching was subpar.
Listen, it's a great interview. You can go to the website, 680thefan.com, and hear the entire thing with Paul Feinbaum on with Domino and Cellini. But if you're a Georgia fan, you love this. It's Kirby in Saban's head. I don't deny that it's true. I do think we've seen Kirby have great recruiting success. Number one for the class of 2018. I think that really bothered Alabama. Now, the Alabama fan who's watching or listening right now, who happened to have tuned in today, will say, yeah, but B.A. on the field the last two times Alabama's beaten Georgia. And that's true. Close games. Georgia let it slip away late. Dog fans have been lamenting that. But it sounds like, from Nick Saban's perspective, he doesn't take quite as much comfort in that as you might think. I think he hears somebody tiptoeing up behind him. And that's not tiptoeing footsteps. That's pounding feet, getting closer and closer every single day. In 2019... may be the year that all that recruiting success that Kirby's enjoyed against Nick Saban, that it comes home and the fruit of that is borne out in an SEC championship win against his old boss. And won't that be really fun to see? My name is Brandon Adams. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Hello to you. Thanks for being with us live on video today, 10 a.m. Dog Nation Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, radio at noon on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref, and in podcast form wherever you can find podcasts, including the world-famous DogNation.com. We're just really glad to have you on the program today. Really good stuff there. If you want to weigh in on what you thought about what Feinbaum had to say about the relationship between Saban and Kirby, we'd love to watch you. Either live comments on video, hit me up on Twitter at DogNationDaily, or put a comment in the comment section when we post the show at the worldfamousdognation.com. I'll also put a link to the full interview in our podcast post when we post it there at dognation.com. Coming up a little bit later on, I want to have Jeff Sintel on the program. A lot of recruiting stuff I want to get into with Jeff. And one of the things I want to follow up on is actually something we've already talked about a couple of times this week. We had a really good edition of Before the Hedges presented by Kroger on Wednesday, where one of the things that we do each and every week is we look at the top targets on Georgia's board now for the class of 2020. And one of the names that comes up there is Brian Brzee. Now, yesterday on our program, I replayed some of the audio highlights from what Jeff had to say about that, just because not everybody got a chance to hear, because you probably remember Facebook and Instagram were down this week. So a lot of people who normally watch Before the Hedges presented by Kroger on Facebook were not able to see it there. So I wanted to make you a little bit aware of kind of some of the stuff that Jeff had to say. And the more I hear this one comment from Jeff Sintel, the more I start to think, boy, there's something you got to pay really close attention to when it comes to Brian Brzee. Listen to, first of all, the relationship that Brzee currently has with Clemson. We're talking about the nation's number one prospect here. Listen to that, but also listen to the nature of the Georgia visit that's coming up. And that's the thing for me that I think is interesting for a couple of reasons. So let me let you hear Jeff one more time, and I'll tell you what jumps out to me about that. Here's Jeff on Brian Brzee.
Going to take a couple in April, and he's going to save the bulk of them for the fall. I think it'd be very important for Georgia in the long run for him to stay uncommitted through the fall, take that official visit to Georgia, looking to do that at a game. Georgia wants him at a game, and really chummy with Nolan Smith and Trayvon Walker. I can see him doing that. One last quick point about Brzee is everybody's hearing the whispers. Yeah. A lot of folks are thinking about Clemson. I just want to point everybody to the timeline of the autopsy of the 2019 class. Maybe about this time a year ago, Owen Popo was still thinking about Clemson and Georgia. Auburn was there a little bit, but Clemson and Georgia were still in the mix. Maybe February, or late February, mid-February of 2018, and we all know how that turned out. So stay tuned in for Brian Brzee, folks.
So here's what I think is really interesting about that. Jeff says, hey, Clemson, watch out for them. Georgia going to host Brian Brzee probably for an in-season official visit on a game day. Now, I talked about this on DN90 yesterday. One of the things that concerns me about that is what Kirby Smart himself has said about the challenge of hosting official visits on game days. This was a part of the interview that Kirby did with Tony Barnhart for TMG College Sports. We had Tony on the show yesterday. One of the things that came up with the subject of recruiting. Do we have the quote? Yeah. Here's Kirby with Tony. He says, your official visits used to be in December and January, and now they have to be during the season. And in-season official visits are really hard. There's a lot going on. So Kirby says, in-season official visits are really hard. Jeff Sintel says the official visit, when it's taken for Brian Brzee at Georgia, is probably going to have to be in-season. Is that a reason for Georgia fans to be concerned? I don't know. Obviously, as I joke around from time to time, we get a little worked up about various subjects this time of year when it comes to recruiting. Many of these don't materialize to be anything. Maybe this won't either. But I can't help but think what our buddy Jeff Sintel has also said about this kind of stuff in the past. Do you remember when five-star linebacker N'Kobe Dean from last year's recruiting class almost took his an official visit for the Vanderbilt game the week before Georgia played LSU? Apparently, Georgia didn't want him to do that. At the time, Jeff Sintel went into some more detail about that. Here's what Jeff said then.
I think there's one thing that nobody has thought or felt or said on a message board yet about the LSU game, and that was maybe how Georgia was pretty wise not to want to host N'Kobe Dean for his official visit to take away from some prep for the LSU
point.
Game. Because obviously the Bulldogs needed to be all hands on deck in the film room for that. And I don't know how you should feel about this. Number one, you're going to have him in town for a big ball game where Athens will likely be popping no matter what the Tigers' record looks like at that time, and no matter whether Gus Malzahn's seat can get any hotter there on the plane. But it does show one thing. It shows, number one, how tight his schedule is, because he's going to take an official visit after that to Auburn the following weekend, and then look for that LSU official now to come at the end of his season, after he's been in his All-Star game, and then after he's also finished his state championship run at Horn Lakes, Mississippi. So a lot of stuff to think about there. Georgia gets him on campus for an official visit, and now that seems very likely, when in the past it was very much in doubt.
So a lot to unpack there. The bottom line is Georgia ultimately wins out with N'Kobe Dean, but there was a little bit of concern about when he took his official visit, being in season, hard to roll out the red carpet as much as Georgia wanted to. Is that going to be an issue with Brian Brzee as well? We'll get ready to talk to Jeff Sintel about that. I'll also tell you later on, we'll do our Kroger kickoff as we kick off the weekend. I want you to be paying attention to some UGA athletics here this weekend, because you get some big stuff going on as the Diamond Dogs and the softball team begin SEC play. We'll talk about that a little bit later on as part of our Kroger kickoff. For now, though, here on this Friday, always fun to talk some UGA recruiting. Let's welcome Jeff Sintel right now.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
So we'll say hello to Jeff Sintel. We've certainly talked a good bit about him over the last couple of days. It only makes sense that we would talk with him right now over the subject we've been addressing. Jeff, let me first of all say thank you for being back with us. We appreciate your time here on Dog Nation Daily, and looking forward to talking a little recruiting with you. Hope you're doing well today.
Hey, Brandon, I'm good, man. I guess everybody that wanted to go out and swing the tennis racket or hit golf balls today keep getting bad news from the weatherman, sir.
Yeah, we'll try to fight that off. It's obviously been beautiful weather the last couple of days, so people would love to finish off the week on a strong note from a weather standpoint. I guess we'll pay close attention to that. You know, it's going to get cold again here pretty soon, too, so we can't quite get this corner turned to spring, but we'll eventually get there. Let me talk about this, Jeff, because as I said, I've talked about you on this a couple of minutes. Could not help but notice, looking back on what you said on Wednesday's edition of Before the Hedges presented by Kroger, when you talked about Brian Brzee, you talked about the notion that George would host him in season for an official visit. And as I mentioned on DN90 yesterday and on this program a moment ago, Kirby Smart himself told Tony Barnhart this week that in-season visits are just challenging. The schedule demands them now because of how accelerated everything's gotten, especially when you're competing head-to-head for a program like Clemson when it comes to Brzee. But Smart says, listen, it's a lot harder to roll out the red carpet when you're doing something like that during the season and focused on the task at hand, which is beating whatever opponent that you're playing. I also went back and looked at some of the things you said about N'Kobe Dean a year ago, or less than a year ago, last fall, when Dean was supposed to come in for the Vanderbilt game. You certainly got the sense that George would have preferred him do that at some other time. George is, you know, in the thick of the season there at that point in time. He does postpone that, takes the official visit later on. Ultimately, Georgia wins the Dean recruitment. But can we get into the notion of why it is that Georgia is going to have to host Brzee for an in-season official visit? And given the evidence that I just cited, is that a problem?
I think that, well, first of all, let me just go to one quick thing. I think the first thing you got to think about there is, if Georgia's hosting Brian Brzee, for an in-season official, that's kind of already a win, because what that will mean is Clemson has not secured his commitment yet, and he didn't make a commitment over the summer. He didn't make a commitment in the early fall. Big thing there, if you're committed to Clemson, you're not taking official visits anywhere. If you're committed to Clemson and you want to take an official visit somewhere, you just got to decommit. So that would also, just the mere pretense of Georgia getting an official visit in the fall, would lead to the fact that, you know, Clemson hasn't snatched him up over the summer. If you look, Clemson really likes to win its recruiting battles over the summer before they go about the business of going through their conference schedule. Also, the later official visit for Georgia, Georgia likes to, you know, well, Georgia's had a lot of success in the late December official visits for key five-star prospects. Happened with a lot of guys. It happened with Cade Mays, Jamari Salyer, things of that nature. So that's the longer it goes out, obviously it's going to be better for Georgia. Clemson likes to wrap their recruiting big guys up a lot earlier than the Bulldogs have in the past. The other thing to think about with official visits in the 2019 season, you got me thinking, is there's going to be a lot more than this year for Georgia. When you think about the 2019 schedule, Notre Dame pops is a huge official visit weekend for a lot of key targets for the Bulldogs, but also Texas A&M later in the year. And with those two games right there, Brandon, those are already two games that are bigger than any of those official visit weekends the Bulldogs kind of had dialed in for the 2018 season.
So let me deal with two issues that you bring up there, because I think that's two really interesting talking points and stuff we got to address here for a moment. And I'm not trying to set you up to either tell Georgia fans what they don't want to hear or tell Georgia fans what they want to hear. I'm curious of your opinion on this. So you think it's far enough down the road with Clemson and Brzee that Georgia fans need to be worried about not even getting an official visit from Brzee? Because, gosh, Jeff, that'd be pretty disappointing if that was true.
No, I think what it is it's a cause and effect thing. The planning was for Brian to give Georgia an official visit in the fall on a game day. That's what Georgia wanted him to do. Georgia's consistently been an upper echelon school in his recruitment. Just the way Clemson operates, the only thing that would prevent Georgia getting an official visit in the fall is if Clemson keeps moving forward with Brian Brzee and is able to secure the commitment before the season gets underway.
Yeah, that's certainly fair enough. And then the other thing on the idea of these really cool home games for visits, I think you're right. Notre Dame has the sound of that. The Texas A&M game is a perfect time, late November. That feels like a really good time to host some big-time recruits. It's already exciting to think about what that guest list might be. But I'm also going to go back to something else we talked about on Before the Hedges, presented by Kroger this week. You know, that – you know, hope that I have that a lot of these national guys, you know, Kendall Milton will come on his own dime to see some of those games, or G-Day coming up in late April, the same way for Marshawn Lloyd and people like that. I mean, how realistic is it that these guys will take those unofficial visits, pay their own way, be in Athens? When you're recruiting nationally, that's the one big challenge. You can't show up week after week after week the way that some of these in-state guys just have the same opportunity to do. I mean, how many unofficial visits do you think that we can expect to see these elite prospects take? I'm not saying specifically this guy or whatever, but when you think about the Maryland, D.C. guys, the California guys, the you know, the whomevers, I mean, how many unofficial visits can Georgia fans hope for when you just factor in the logistics of the long travel?
I would say, this is definitely an unscientific point I'm about to make here, but I think the formula for Georgia to really have a shot with an out-of-state recruit, especially one of those that's more than like one or two states away and more than a take of gas away, is I think Georgia needs to get not one, but maybe two unofficials, and then also come in on the official. And I think that's when things really get serious, where they've been able to see a big chunk of what it would like to be a Georgia Bulldog, see the program, see Dog Nation at full strength on one of those games. So that's very interesting. Darnell Washington, we just wrote about him on the site yesterday. He's already looking at coming back to Georgia for an unofficial visit, trying to do that around the Rivals five-star challenge in the summer. The other thing for Darnell, and if that doesn't come together, the official visit looks like it's going to be on the homecoming game for Georgia or on the Notre Dame game for Georgia. So you got to see a lot of things. And with Brzee, I guess that's the man of the show, your show topic for today a little bit, because he's already taken at least four unofficial visits to Georgia. So I think he's got a very good sense of all things Georgia in his mind at this time.
Yeah, that's a really good point. That is certainly some important context to add to that. Let me follow up on something we talked about on Tuesday. You know, the thing that I was hand-wringing about then was Rakim Jarrett saying he was about to commit soon and worried about that. And then Jarrett comes back on Twitter a couple days later and says, I got a UGA visit coming up soon. And I know Jarrett put that out on Twitter, I think, for our video audience that hasn't seen this before. I think we've got that. But, I mean, I guess just as a way of following up, since we talked about this before, he says he's going to UGA next week. You know, I guess this goes to show you that we were probably a little bit worried about, you know, too much too soon on that, because one way or another, it sounds like Georgia gets a chance to entertain Jarrett before he makes his decision, right?
Yeah, and I think, you know, Jarrett, let's kind of frame it up the way people need to see it. Ohio State has kind of been the longtime leader for his recruitment. That early love kind of went towards Ohio State. He's now gotten involved with another few schools. Schools like Georgia, schools like Tennessee. Phil wants to take a trip to Clemson, he said on Twitter, before he commits. So, Rakim Jarrett, I think the things most people don't know about him is, number one, he is extremely fast. Sometimes I call it stupid fast, because he runs so fast, it's stupid how fast that gentleman can run. I remember him from the Future 50 event at the Under Armour All-American Week, where he was kind of confident enough to come out to his interview session and conduct said interview session and, you know, basically get his picture taken with a pair of red sunglasses on. And also, while everybody kind of thinks, like, this is a Nicole Hartman-type guy, a real fast slot receiver, he's already well over 204, 205 pounds. So, Rakim Jarrett, five-star receiver, goes to the same high school program, St. John's College High School in Washington, D.C., that one five-star linebacker, Mikael Sherman, also attends.
Yeah, so that'll be a fun one to watch and see how that plays out. I enjoyed your piece with Darnell Washington, the really good-looking athlete, likely a tight end, I guess probably a tight end, if he were to come to a school like Georgia. He's out there in Las Vegas. Really good breakdown of him at DogNation.com. We also talked about this a good bit on Before the Hedges, presented by Kroger. And Jeff, there is a lot about the Washington recruitment I think is interesting. And I think this is interesting from his standpoint and from Georgia's standpoint. Obviously, Washington is one of those unique special athletes that has a chance to really just change the fortune of the program. And it's so similar to Reed Gilbert, because they both potentially could play that tight end position. But this is one of those things, when you have a chance to get that kind of athlete, rare for that position, you got to find a way to go out and do it, I think, because of what it could make your offense look like, just completely different. So it's a really cool toy to play with. And it also seems like, you know, Todd Hartley also showing up big in the story when it comes to Washington. Del McGee, I guess, a little bit of a factor there as well. But for the people who haven't read the story yet at DogNation.com, could you talk a little bit about the relationship between Washington and UGA right now? Because this one's interesting to me for a number of reasons.
Yeah, Brandon, it was for me too. I think this is an example that shows a little bit about Georgia's recruiting acumen and what type of muscle power they have in bringing in recruits from across the country now. I think it says a lot about the future of the Georgia offense, and then at its core, it's just a recruiting story where you learn a little bit about this young man besides just stars and 6'7" and 255, and you also learn why he's so attracted to Georgia. And I would think that any recruitment that has the name Del McGee attached to it automatically gives some sense of confidence or maybe security a little bit for one Brandon Adams when he hears about Del McGee working in recruitment. But I think it also says a lot about Todd Hartley, because let's face it, these two guys, he's going after two very big targets, basically played the same position. Darnell Washington, for all those folks that really just focus on team and not recruits until they sign on the dotted line or they show up at Georgia in a game, I think the Darnell Washington narrative is interesting, because Darnell believes that the Georgia offense is going to change, where the blocking tight end is going to be replaced with more of the mobile, maybe the all-around tight end. And folks, if you want to watch some really good film, some really entertaining film, I don't think I've ever done this before, but in that story, I took the first four plays, which one of those is the most amazing play, according to his coaches, that they have ever seen, the most athletic thing they've ever seen him do. And it's a good read on that one right well, but it was highly entertaining watching his film at 6'7", 255 pounds. He can clock the laser 40 in about 4.78. He's already been named to the Nike opening. He plays linebacker. We'll play a lot of that in 2019. He plays defensive tackle, defensive end, tight end, but There's this one play, Brandon, where basically they just throw it up over the top of one of the layers of coverage, and there's six jerseys within about 3 yards of Darnell Washington. And yet, because the ball's up in the air and he's kind of got go-go gadget arms, he reels that sucker in, and then it takes about four or five of those six guys to get him on the ground. It is just uncanny some of the things he is doing on his film with, like, fake punts and everything else. I'm going to say one more time, a highly enjoyable film watch, and that's Inside the Story on DogNation.com.
And we're seeing some of this on our video right now on our Dog Nation Daily for the folks checking out Facebook, YouTube, or Twitter. And I guess let me kind of bounce off that for a quick question. A lot of times when these guys have multiple positions they could play, they favor position, but a lot of times the elite schools that are recruiting them favor a different position for those recruits. In the case of Washington, because he is so gifted athletically, he's told you that he likes catching touchdowns. I get the sense that he may really be a tight end. You know, a lot of times coaches have defense in mind when players are enjoying the limelight that comes from playing on the offensive side of the ball. But, you know, given what I've read from you about Washington, given what I'm seeing with my own eyes on some of this film, I get the impression that he really could be an offensive guy, much the same way his counterpart here in the state of Georgia, Reed Gilbert, could also be very much that same way. Would you agree with that? Is it a given, you think, that Washington plays tight end, plays on the offensive side in college?
Yeah, I think he's an offensive player. You can kind of see that, especially the way he develops. I don't know too many 6'7" and a half, 260-pound, three techniques or five techniques that move like he does with those arms yet. But for him, you know, and I guess the question everybody's kicking at, and maybe to add another layer of things than what we just spoke about on Before the Hedges, I can see both Reed Gilbert and Darnell Washington being split out wide, doing a lot of those Jimmy Graham hybrid type stuff. David Njoku out of another Miami tight end that's in Cleveland. That's another skill set comparison. A lot of the things these guys do, Travis Kelce, you know, these are the high level NFL tight ends that they can get out wide and they can get in the slot a little bit, and they're going to draw like Gilbert in 7-on-7 coverage this year. So far, everybody doesn't know what to do with that young man because he's 6'5" and a half, great ball skills. Double teams, triple teams, he can come down with the ball in red zone situations and all those instances as well. And this is 7-on-7, Brandon, and he's seeing a man in front of him, and he's seeing a safety over the top of him. And when his 7-on-7 team is so successful because what they do is then they just run they're really tiny or they're really quick slot receivers across the middle on slants. And when you're occupying that much coverage towards Arik Gilbert, it's really hard to stop an offense like that. And I think both Gilbert and Washington can do more things than we've seen a lot of the Georgia tight ends do in the past.
All right, when we finish up here in a moment, I want to talk about the great quarterback article you wrote this week with quotes from a lot of elite quarterbacks and their feelings on how the recruiting process is playing out for that position and how the transfer portal potentially impacts that. It was a really interesting article beyond just Georgia. The trends in college football in general kind of come up there. I want to get a thought from you on that before we're done. Let me squeeze in one more thing before we get there, though, and it's on Chad Lindbergh, the big offensive lineman. And I guess, Jeff, in reading that piece at DogNation.com, what comes to mind for me is some of the stuff we've heard coming out of Knoxville over the last couple of days. I talked yesterday on Dog Nation Daily about a lot of Tennessee players being very complimentary of Wanya Morris, a much smaller offensive lineman than Georgia seems to prioritize in each of its last few recruiting cycles, but a highly rated prospect nonetheless. And Georgia just likes bigger guys. Vols are happy with Morris. Georgia wants those big, giant, you know, Sequoia tree type guys. And, you know, Lindbergh's another example of that. More than 300 pounds. He's 6'6 right now. I mean, there is a clear prototype of what Georgia goes after. I guess Clay Webb is the one exception to that rule, but he's also, you know, one day maybe a center, and they typically run a little smaller as it's all, you know, typically run a little smaller anyway. But when it comes to their offensive line positions, Georgia only goes after behemoths, and Lindbergh would seem to be a carbon copy of what Georgia's chased down the last couple of years, right?
Yeah, offensive line recruiting is very interesting. I've said a lot, Brandon, that Georgia and Sam Pittman kind of have like one of those height requirements for their Great Wall of Georgia, kind of like Six Flags or Universal Studios does with its rides. And normally it's about 6'6", 305, 315. And the thinking there is Georgia can slim down an offensive lineman in high school rather than put on weight in college. And Lindbergh, man, he's obviously a Texas kid. He's an East Texas kid, almost right down there by the Bay. But He's a guy that is very talented at what he does and has that type of nasty streak, kind of the thing we saw out of John Young as well with his interest in Georgia. And I think what Georgia's looking for, big picture there, is they're looking for four. They got greedy Brandon Adams-style, Montgomery Burns-style recruiting. They might try to get five offensive linemen. But I think the real model there is probably two great offensive tackles and then two kind of combo guys that can do a lot of guard, a little bit of tackle, and a little bit of center as well. I think that's what they're looking for. I think, obviously, the Justin Rogers recruitment kind of complicates things a little bit because he's looking for a true position fit in college. Excuse me, a position change in college. And that's really hard for any program, especially one like Georgia, to sit there and go, okay, don't have film of you at tackle yet. Do you want to be an offensive tackle, or do you want to be not what he's rated at as a five-star guard? Doesn't want to be a center. But Rogers has kind of put out there a lot now that he wants to be a defensive lineman in college as well. And that's going to be a different evaluation for Justin Rogers because there's not a whole lot of film about what he can do as a defensive lineman. So I think Justin Rogers, if he wants to do that with these elite schools, will probably have to show what he can do in the team camps, the very specific team camps over the summer.
Can I, since you bring that up, can we just finish up with that before we move on to the final thing? I think that Rogers recruitment is going to be interesting, and I'm reminded of what Washington said, Darnell Washington said in some of those clips we played on Before the Hedges on Wednesday, that he felt like the Georgia coaches were keeping it real with him. You know, and one can only imagine what it was they were keeping it real about, but for a guy that could play multiple positions, you would assume that part of that comes up. As a Georgia fan that would love to see Justin Rogers come to UGA because I like him as a player and I seem to like him as a young man based on some of his social media activity, I hope he appreciates on the recruiting trail the coaching staffs that are keeping it real with him. Jeff, because you know this because you've been around the block a million times, there's no shortage of programs that are going to tell him, yeah, come here, you can be our bookend offensive tackle, or yeah, come here, you can be our elite defensive tackle. But a lot of the programs that sail on the recruiting trail prove themselves to be liars once a lot of these players get on campus. If Sam Pittman keeps it real with him that, no, we think you're a great interior offensive lineman, we think you're going to play at that position in the NFL, as a Georgia partisan, I hope he appreciates the honesty from Georgia more so than the tell-you-what-you-want-to-hear behavior that a lot of other programs are going to throw his way.
Yeah, and I think that's just good relationship business there. You don't want to bring a candidate as a position with kind of fool's gold and then move him around the second day of practice or the first day of practice. Even though that's worked a lot in a lot of eras of college football, everybody remembers the story of Jason Witten, how he goes to Knoxville and he was told he was going to be a defensive lineman, a defensive end, and he gets moved to tight end basically the first day of practice in Tennessee. That happens all the time, happens everywhere about how guys think they're coming into a situation when in reality the coaches have a very different picture once they get that young man in a practice jersey and on the practice field. So I think they're, Rogers is a guy that's very talented. He's just going to have to show a lot of these schools if he wants to be a defensive lineman that he's an elite defensive lineman, especially for a school like Georgia. Everybody that knows the roster the way we're supposed to, Brandon, knows that Mikael Carter, Julian Rochester, and Tyler Clark are exiting the program.
Yep.
That's kind of out of a graduation or eligibility vector that's seen about eight guys off the defensive line working their way, just using up their time at Georgia. Everybody knows in 2017, Georgia really didn't bring in a defensive lineman at all. In 2018, that was the second straight year when Georgia tried to bring in a defensive lineman who didn't qualify, who had to come a year later through the junior college route. And I think that's why, everybody didn't see a lot of big plays out of that, elite defensive tackle across the front because that guy wasn't there for Georgia. Georgia really relied heavily on a guy like Tyler Clark, a guy like Julian Rochester and Mikael Carter to kind of be fire-breathing dragons in the middle of the defensive front for Georgia. And I don't know if we can even honestly say that those guys have been that for Georgia. Maybe Tyler Clark really late in the 2017 season, but defensive line play has got to be at a premium. Defensive line recruiting has got to be at a premium right now with Georgia. They got to get the right guys, and they can't look at a five-star guard that now wants to be a defensive tackle.
Yep.
And promise him the G's until they're pretty sure he can deliver at that position on a Saturday.
That's 100% accurate. I totally agree with that. I've kept you long, and I apologize, but I did want to get one final thought from you. Love the article this week on quarterback recruiting and how recruits view their future with the transfer portal being such a prominent part of the college football discussion right now. Jeff, you talked to a lot of these quarterbacks. You cataloged all their thoughts. Ultimately, though, what was your big takeaway from either the consistent thread you saw popping up over and over again or the trend where you think all of this is heading next? What did you come away thinking after speaking to so many quarterbacks about the way they view their role in a very quickly changing world of college football?
Yeah, so I probably talked to about 24 guys over the last 2 or 3 months about that. And I needed to write that article. We needed to write that article for the Georgia people, simply because Georgia's the only school that signed back-to-back-to-back five-star prospects. They're also the only school that has seen 2 5-star quarterbacks leave the program in a calendar year's time, basically, as well. So I wanted to kind of really get my arms around, or try to get our arms around, the quarterback process, how do quarterbacks these days view. Listen, there's a lot of roads, a lot of different paths now for quarterbacks. You can follow the Tua Tagovailoa model. You can follow the Jalen Hurts path. You can follow the Kelly Bryant path. You can follow the Justin Fields path. Everybody's kind of figuring out their own ways. Tate Martell's got his own path in college football. So I wanted to know, basically, what are these young men taking note of? What are they kind of scribbling down and understanding and beginning to realize about the nature of their position? A few quick takeaways. I'm not a psychologist, even though sometimes I try to play one on Dog Nation Daily. Number one, you've got these guys. Quarterbacks are a different sort. They've never had to wait. They get on the field, usually wherever they're at. If you're an elite quarterback, you're starting your freshman year of high school. Sometimes a lot of guys figure out their situation so they can move to one school to another so they can be the guy for 2 or 3 seasons at a certain high school because they want those reps and they want that game time. Quarterback's the one position where no matter how talented you are, these guys are not conditioned and not used to waiting on their turn to play or earning their time to play. And also, these guys want to be elite. There's a measure of confidence that makes a great quarterback with the feeling that I can beat that guy out. Perhaps one of the most telling things that I learned through the process of talking to quarterbacks is that this came from five-star Bo Nix at Auburn. As he said, sometimes guys leave because the coach gets settled on their guy and they don't feel like they have a true opportunity to take the job away from that guy anymore, so they hit the ripcord and they hit the eject button and they look elsewhere. I thought that was a very interesting statement by Bo Nix.
Yeah, it really was, and I hope people see this story at DogNation.com. It's just a really good way of really keeping track with how a lot of these quarterbacks view what's happening around them right now. Unprecedented level of player movement currently, and quarterbacks are at the center of all that. Dog Nation, really good report from Jeff Sintel at DogNation.com. Jeff, I know I kept you real long today, but we appreciate your insight onto everything involving UGA recruiting right now. Thanks for being with us. We'll look forward to reading a bunch from you next week at DogNation.com, and catch up with you back here again on the program next week as well.
All right, guys. 2020 will be a fun ride and a fun class. I can promise you that.
No doubt about that.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
All right, great stuff from Jeff Sintel. Really just top-notch recruiting information. Always love having Jeff on the program. And he says it's going to be a fun ride, and it is. And, you know, we'll get nervous every now and then. We'll get worked up about different things every now and then, but that's all part of the fun, too. And I cannot wait to see how this visitors list forms for G-Day. Unofficial guys hopefully coming in, packing the plays with, you know, some of these elite 4 and 5-star names we've talked a bunch about. That's going to be really fun. I got some good stuff coming up for the SEC Through. Before that, I want to remind you about a big event taking place tomorrow. You know, my family, we are huge fans of, like, authentic, real dairy milk from Georgia cows. We go through gallons and gallons of it each and every week. It's good for your bones, good for your teeth. You know all about all that. It just tastes good. My kids drink it with every meal. You know, I drink it with my coffee and kind of everything else. We just love real milk Georgia dairy cows. And tomorrow, a great chance to appreciate kind of where all this comes from. It's a really cool event at the Alpharetta Kroger on State Bridge Road. It's from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. The Georgia Mobile Dairy Classroom is going to be on hand. You're going to have dairy cows that you can pet and interact with. If you're watching on video, you can see that. You walk right up there and pet the cow and kind of see where the milk comes from, which is a really interesting thing. Also, don't forget, when it comes to this real Georgia milk from these dairy cows, remember, not only do you drink it, but it's an ingredient that gets used use in a lot of the food that we really love. So some Georgia chefs are going to be on hand tomorrow making some fantastic dishes with real Georgia milk from these dairy cows, including peach stuff, French toast, creamy Parmesan, pancetta pasta. And listen, my favorite, if I have to admit, I am a huge fan of milkshakes, and they're going to be having, as you would probably guess and hope, milkshakes on hand there as well. Here's the website you need to go to for more information on this. It's milkonmymind.com. Milkonmymind.com, and find out more about the big event starting at 10 a.m. tomorrow at the Kroger there in Alpharetta on State Bridge Road. That's going to be a lot of fun. All right. Let me take a quick moment to update you on a couple things that are happening around the SEC when it comes to spring practice. And some of this is follow-ups on things we've mentioned before. We've talked before about Alabama linebacker Ali Cahoe, who kind of transferred from Washington to Alabama not too long ago in unusual circumstances. A part of that Alabama interior linebacking corps this year, and a guy that they're going to call on to potentially be a big part of that situation. Been gone from spring practice. A lot of Alabama fans were nervous about that. Cahoe was active on social media this week saying he's on his way back soon. This is a story worth following. Alabama's had some bad luck injury-wise and whatnot when it comes to those interior linebackers. And you think of Alabama being deep everywhere and solid every position, maybe not as deep as you might think with those inside linebackers. The Cahoe story is probably worth following, one maybe worth paying a bit of attention to. I saw an interesting quote from Gus Malzahn at AL.com. You know, Auburn, one of the big stories, and we've said this a couple of times, that if you're a Georgia fan looking at a non-Georgia story, you ought to be paying attention to in the SEC. It's what's going to happen with Auburn at quarterback. Right now, there are four guys going through spring practice. Two guys that have been there, Malik Willis, Joey Gatewood. Both of those guys were, you know, relatively well-known recruits. Gatewood probably more so than Willis, although Willis has probably performed better in practice than Gatewood has. Listen to folks on the scene. You've also got Cort Sandberger, former minor league baseball player, and you get the hotshot incoming freshman Bo Nix. And what Malzahn has said is, I want to give a quote-unquote fair chance to all four of these quarterbacks. You just can't do that. There's not enough practices. There's not enough practice time. You can't evaluate four guys individually as a potential starting quarterback. You have got to eliminate some people of this competition, and Malzahn knows that, whether he's going to admit that publicly or not. But here's the one thing that I was kind of thinking about a little bit from a Georgia perspective. Now, ultimately, I don't really think that Auburn is that much of a threat to Georgia. I do think playing the game on the road makes the game more difficult, especially given what happened there 2 Novembers ago. But ultimately, Auburn's probably a fringe top 25 team, not a real threat to Georgia. But by November, Auburn could be better than they are right now, or that they look on paper right now, and they would appear to be really early in the season. Because early in the season, you get the sense the guy that's been there the longest, Malik Willis, he may be the favorite to get a lot of those snaps. He's just been around the offense for a while. But over the course of the year, just given the profile of the four players, you got to think by the time you get to November, there's a much better chance, barring injury or barring regression from a young player, that Bo Nix is the quarterback that Georgia's going to be facing. So Auburn is actually probably tougher in November than they are in September, October. The weird irony here is, as much as I've complained about playing Auburn earlier in the year, 2019 may be a season where playing Auburn earlier in the year actually would have been better, because I think overall Auburn's probably worse at quarterback earlier in the year than they will be at the end of the season. Ultimately, Georgia's going to be a big favorite, you know, probably no matter what, but I guess that was kind of kicking around in my head just a little bit there. Let me do a couple other real quick stories. So I've said before that I don't believe Florida this season is going to be as good as the common opinion about the Gators is. Now, when you look overall at what Florida brings back for this season and what it brings in from its most recent recruiting class, the truth is there's some real talent on defense there. I won't deny that. They've actually recruited fairly well on that side of the ball, all things considered. So if I end up being right, and if Florida, despite there's, you know, some guys on the defensive side of the ball maybe ready to step up, where am I going to be right about when it comes to Florida? What is the Achilles heel that's going to prevent Florida from achieving that next progression of success that Florida fans and Dan Mullen are hoping for? Here's the position group I think you need to look at. Offensive line. If you really dive deep into Florida, which just started its spring practice, you see a lot of changeover coming for that offensive line. They could have as many as 4 new starters at the various positions here this season. Most importantly, they got to replace Martez Ivey, who probably never was quite as good as Gators fans would have hoped, but he was a starter for, you know, essentially his entire Georgia career and a real dependable bookend at left tackle, even if it wasn't always, you know, as good as Florida fans hoped. Juwan Taylor probably ended up being a better player, to be all honest, but That's a lot of replacement there for the offensive line. So if you're a Florida fan or if you're a Georgia fan looking for Florida to not be very good, around here we kind of are, look at the development of those offensive linemen as maybe the reason why that happens. That's at least worth thinking about. Then another two other really quick stories. I saw where Josh Kendall had a pretty good story in The State, the newspaper that covers South Carolina. Big push for the Gamecocks during spring practice. South Carolina has not been good running the football against good teams. He had some stats in The State, pretty interesting on this regard. Georgia included. You can go back and look at the last couple times Georgia's played South Carolina. Gamecocks could not move the football on the ground there at all. Brian McClendon, a name that Georgia fans know really well. I think he's going to have some extra pressure on him as offensive coordinator this year to find rushing yards against quality opponents. That's the reason why South Carolina didn't really pop last year as much as I would have expected them to. They were not a real threat by the end of the season. Need to run the ball better against good teams. That's apparently going to be a big point of emphasis for South Carolina this spring. And then one more story to get to. Jeremy Pruitt did this last year. He's now doing it again, going on and on in his spring press conferences about the offense, just whipping up on the defense, you know, getting the best of the defense. Said that a lot last spring when we saw it on the field. The evidence didn't really sort of back that up. Offense was not, all that dynamic in comparison to the defense. This year may be a little more interesting, the fact that the guy that's leading that offense during practice is the former Georgia offensive coordinator, Jim Chaney. So do with that what you will. Pruitt praising his offense a little bit coming out of the spring, so that's at least worth paying attention to. We'll make that your SEC through. All right, coming up in just a minute here on Dog Nation Daily, I'm going to announce the winner of our Road to Atlanta t-shirt giveaway for today, and I've got to make another kind of brief announcement about the Road to Atlanta t-shirt situation. We'll do that coming up in just a moment. Before that, though, there are a couple of things about the weekend I want to make you aware of. Let's get ready to do that as a part of our Kroger kickoff. This is we always say around here with Kroger, we love kicking off the weekend. When you're thinking about the weekend, you think about Kroger and all the stuff you need to make your weekend fun, whether it be cookout stuff or everything else. Kroger's got it all covered for you. But as we kick off the weekend, we also want to make you aware of the stuff happening around UGA, too. Now, spring practice begins next week, pro day for Georgia next week, so that's all on the horizon. But let me focus on just the weekend for right now. In particular, I want you to pay close attention to the baseball team, the Diamond Dogs out of South Carolina beginning today. This is as big as the opening SEC series of a season can be. This one's pretty big. Georgia's got a great record, highly ranked, but you know, to listen to some of the South Carolina people talk about it, haven't really played anybody as of yet. So proving itself against a quality opponent, South Carolina one-time national champion on the road, that'll certainly count as a quality opponent. Proving itself against a quality opponent for Georgia, I think, is going to be key. Emerson Hancock takes the pill tonight. So Diamond Dogs are going to be kind of fun to watch. SEC play starting off tonight. That's worth paying attention to. Softball team begins its SEC play at Missouri this weekend. That's worth a look as well. Gym Dogs, final home meet of the season for them, I believe, tonight. Hosting Utah on Saturday. Utah is a heritage program. They're typically really good, so pay attention to that. And it's St. Patrick's Day on Sunday, so happy St. Patrick's Day to all of you. And by the way, speaking of St. Patrick's Day with your friends at Kroger, make sure you check out Kroger.com/whatsfordinner, because if you're going to do one of these authentic, you know, really cool St. Patrick's Day dinners, they've got all that for you, plus a little beverages that kind of go along with that kind of stuff. You can get that at your local Atlanta Kroger as well. So please check out Kroger.com/whatsfordinner, and you can pick up all of that. All right, before we wrap up today's program, let me also congratulate our Road to Atlanta t-shirt winner from yesterday. I asked you to put some comments in the comments section at the podcast post we posted at dognation.com. So appreciate you doing that. And I drew one of those names out of a hat. Congratulations to Kevin Fleming. Kevin, you are the winner today of our Road to Atlanta t-shirt giveaway. Now, as we get ready to wrap up today's program, let me also say this, that I'm going to have to push pause on the Road to Atlanta t-shirt giveaway just for a bit. We'll get back and do more of these. The honest truth is my bosses have told me until we get some of the logistics taken care of, until I personally get some of the logistics taken care of getting these t-shirts shipped out to the people who've already won them, I need to hold off on giving more away. So I've got more to give away. I just need to make sure we get the giveaways taken care of that we've already done. So give us a little bit of time on that. We'll get back to doing some of these again eventually. I think it's a really important concept. I believe Georgia being back on the road to Atlanta here this season, season is a really important thing. And so we're going to do our part to celebrate that with the Road to Atlanta t-shirts, but we got to give away the ones we've already announced, and then we'll kind of get back to that a little bit later on. Let me also say, speaking of Florida, those lousy, stinking Gators, we mentioned them earlier, 867 days. That's how long it's been since Florida's beaten Georgia. It's our Gator Hater Updater and a great way to go into the weekend. We'll see you Monday, everybody.